Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio. And how the tech are you? So, over the last couple of years, I've talked a lot about the concept of right to repair. In fact, I talked about it this week. Simply put, the right to repair is all about giving individuals the right to perform their own maintenance and repair on the products that they buy, rather than being forced to go through some official channel from the manufacturer itself. So a lot of hardware companies will lock down their products in ways that make it difficult or sometimes even impossible for the average person or independent repair shop to do maintenance or repair on their products. A company could use stuff like proprietary fasteners, for example, that require specialized tools to remove them. Or the company might not provide any useful documentation on how their technology works or what to do if something goes wrong. And if you don't know how something works, you really don't have a way to fix it when it's not working. There are lots of ways that a company might lock down a product. It's not unusual in the world of vehicles, from automobiles to heavy farm equipment, for a company to tie everything into a computer system, and that computer system is more or less inaccessible unless you have the right equipment and knowledge to tap into it. So these are all examples of almost turning products into black boxes. And meanwhile, you have people who say, I want to be able to fix this if something goes wrong and not have to bring it all the way back to some official store. Now, a lot of companies will actually tell you the reason that they even do this, that they do all this locking away stuff, is for your own good. Take Apple, for example. Traditionally, Apple had argued that locking down its systems really keeps customers safe, because Apple can guarantee a high level of service, and if just any Yahoo out there could open up an iPhone and make changes, then who knows what evil doers would get up to. Maybe you would think that you're taking your phone to get your battery swapped out, but what's really happening is Joe Schmo of Joe Schmo's iPhone and VCR Repair is actually installing like geo trackers on your device or something. Other companies, like e-bike companies, I talked about this week, they have argued that any repairs that are done outside the company's own ecosystem could lead to dangerous situations, like a fire. And it's true that some electric vehicles, you know, stuff like hoverboards and even some e-bikes, have been involved in some fires, some of them really catastrophic ones. But these fires typically result from poor manufacturing processes and damage to batteries. And in this case, you talk about a battery where you've got a flaw somewhere that creates a short circuit inside the battery itself. It is a pathway through which the electrochemical system that can generate electricity has a shortcut. It bypasses everything else. This leads to the battery overheating very quickly and, in some cases, exploding into flame. But again, that's not necessarily because some e-bike owner decided they were going to replace a battery on their own. More often than not, it happens because there's a flaw in the actual manufacturing process, and the owner had nothing to do with it whatsoever. In fact, in yesterday's news episode, I talked about how a representative for the lobbying organization called People for Bikes, which, by the way, represents the bike industry. It doesn't represent the bicyclist community. Anyway, this representative couldn't give evidence of this being a situation at all. Instead, this person said the evidence was quote unquote anecdotal. Does this mean that it would be impossible for someone to accidentally cause a fire while trying to repair their own e-bike? No, it would be possible, but it isn't something that's actually been documented. So the reason for the policy is based upon something that hasn't been proven to actually happen. You know, it's like one of those protective measures, and you're saying, but if the thing that it's protecting against hasn't happened, how is it protecting anyone other than your own interests? Anyway, a big reason why companies actually do this is that it makes them a lot more money. A company like Apple, by controlling the entire ecosystem, can make money throughout the whole life cycle of your Apple device. So let's say it's an iPhone. Well, first, Apple gets money when you buy your iPhone. They get money if you pay for AppleCare. They also make money if you don't have AppleCare and then you have to bring the phone into an Apple store for repairs. Or they make money by granting a license to repair shops that pay for the privilege of being able to work on Apple devices. By controlling the big picture, Apple can generate revenue the whole time. Every touch point is a place where Apple makes money. So recently, Apple has actually backed off of this a little bit. The company has started to offer a self-service repair kit, which includes some of the tools needed to access the innards of stuff like iPhones, and you can purchase a kit or you can rent one for a week. You know, if you're someone who doesn't need to own one of these kits, you could just rent it for a week for like $50 and then use it to do your own repairs. You can also purchase replacement parts from Apple and repair manuals. Apple's providing those as well. It's not exactly cheap. And if you're just working on your own device, you might eventually come to the conclusion that it would actually be less hassle and less expensive to bring your device into Apple anyway. But if you're an independent repair shop owner, the program could make a lot of financial sense. Anyway, the whole reason that I'm bringing this up again is to talk about something that has been a longstanding issue, one that has led to endless jokes and posts and memes and videos of people really frustrated as they go through drive-thru. I'm talking about the much maligned ice cream machines at the fast food chain McDonald's. So the company iFixit, which I love, by the way, iFixit is a phenomenal resource. If you want to learn how stuff works, check out iFixit because they have these detailed repair sections on all these different devices. And as a result, you will learn how those devices work. You have to, again, if you want to be able to fix something, you got to know how it works in the first place. It does get very technical, but it is incredibly detailed. Anyway, iFixit has been documenting how to repair all types of technology for years, and they recently did a piece on the ice cream machines at McDonald's. And it's actually well worth checking out their YouTube video on the subject. It is really fantastic. It's entertaining and informative. And it's, you know, like just like 10 minutes long. It's not long at all. So it's really worth checking out. So some of the stuff I'm going to talk about will overlap what they cover in that video, but I'm also looking at some other things as well. Now, the issue here is that there's this essentially a perception, more but really based in reality, that the ice cream machines at McDonald's are quote unquote always broken. So iFixit found that this perception has at least some merit to it, because at any given time, according to various tools online, around a third of McDonald's franchises have an ice cream machine that's not currently working, which almost makes it sound like it's a conspiracy. So what's going on here? Well, to answer that, we have to learn a little bit about the company that provides those ice cream machines. Once upon a time, it was called the Taylor Freezer Corporation. Now it's just known as the Taylor Company. And way back in 1926, a man named Charles Taylor, whom the company describes as a third generation ice cream maker, wanted to create a means of making ice cream without having to hand crank a device and to guarantee better consistency between ice cream batches. I guess it would benefit us to first understand how ice cream actually, you know, happens, which involves some physics and some chemistry. So essentially, you need to take your ice cream mixture, which typically includes ingredients like sugar, milk, and fat, and then any other flavorings that you want. And you might be using something like heavy cream to provide the fat, and you want to freeze this mixture. But the structure of this liquid, you know, in order to get it to crystallize, it actually requires a lower freezing point than what we get using just ice. And that presents a challenge. How do you get a mixture to a cold enough temperature to freeze, particularly if you want to make ice cream during the dog days of summer? How do you get that mixture colder than the temperature of ice? If you've ever used an old-fashioned ice cream churn, you know, the hand-cranked kind, you know that you pack the perimeter of the churn, like there's a gap inside the churn between the outer wall and the ice cream chamber, right? And you pack that with a mixture of ice and salt. Why do you use salt? What does the salt do? Well, salt lowers the freezing point for water. If you're talking about pure water, that of course freezes at 0 degrees Celsius or 32 degrees Fahrenheit. When you introduce salt to water, it will require a lower temperature for that water to freeze. How much lower depends upon the concentration of salt. So this is also why people will salt roads and walkways either before or during a snow or ice storm. It lowers the freezing point. That means the ice will actually start to melt at a lower temperature than it normally would. So if you're on a winter day, maybe the high temperature is going to be like 28 degrees. Well, Fahrenheit. 28 degrees Fahrenheit is still below the freezing point for water, right? And so typically the frozen roads would remain frozen. But if you put salt on those roads, it will lower the freezing point of water, and maybe you get it down so that the freezing point of water would be 20 degrees Fahrenheit. And since your high is 28, it means the ice will actually start to melt. So that's why we add salt to roads in the winter times. On a molecular level, what's going on is that the salt is interfering with the water's ability to form the crystalline structure of ice. So that means the freezing point has to go down in order to get a temperature low enough to overcome salt inhibiting the water in this way. And again, the concentration of salt will determine exactly how low you have to get before the water will freeze. But what does that mean for our ice cream? Well, let's imagine the ice cream maker is an enclosed thermal system. The ice and salt mixture is at a lower temperature than the ice cream mixture, right? Like, let's say we've poured the ice cream mixture in, it's more or less at room temperature, and the surrounding ice and salt mixture is closer to the freezing point for water, so it's closer to 0 degrees Celsius. We know that the laws of thermodynamics state that if you have stuff that is of different energy levels, the system will tend toward an equilibrium, and that we know that energy has to flow from high concentrations to low concentrations. It can't go the other way. Energy can't go from low to high. It has to go from high to low. So our ice mixture begins to melt. So the heat from our ice cream mixture starts to transfer to the outer part of the ice cream chamber. That heat transfers to the ice and salt mixture, and so the ice is absorbing heat, and thus the temperature of the ice cream mixture is going down. So it then is going to need to get cold enough to freeze that ice cream mixture. If we were just using ice, we wouldn't get there, because the temperature we would be at would be essentially 0 degrees Celsius or 32 degrees Fahrenheit. It wouldn't be cold enough to get to the temperature that would be required to turn the ice cream mixture into actual ice cream. But the salt we've added has lowered the freezing point for the ice in the churn. This is important. Let's think about the different phases of water in terms of energy, right? So ice is water with its low energy point. At this stage, in this phase, water molecules are in that crystalline structure. They pretty much stop moving, so they are very low energy. So we can then think of liquid water as water that has a medium energy phase. In this phase, the water molecules can move around, and they do. And water will also take the shape of whatever container it's in. So stuff is happening when it's in liquid form. If we were to go even warmer and increase the energy more, then we would have the water evaporate into gas, and then it would be at a very high energy phase. Those molecules would be zipping around all over the place. But anyway, our ice, the solid water, starts to melt, but the salt we've added has lowered that freezing point to below 0 Celsius or 32 Fahrenheit. Meanwhile, we have this salty water that's inside the churn. And that salty water is going to continue to transfer energy to the ice, because remember, the liquid water has a higher energy than the solid water does, than the ice does. So the decreased freezing point means that the liquid water will actually keep giving energy to the ice, even below the normal point for freezing, because, you know, as it's transferring heat to the ice, the liquid water's temperature continues to drop, and now the freezing point is lower, so it remains freezing longer, and you end up getting this salty, icy slurry inside the churn that gets to a much lower temperature than the freezing point for water. And thus, you can have a low enough temperature where the ice cream mixture inside the chamber will reach a temperature low enough to start to crystallize and become ice cream. So yeah, it's really cool that it works this way just by using salt and ice. And I gotta tell you, like, it's been so long since I've had basic physics that it took me a while to really get my mind wrapped around this, because it seems almost counterintuitive in some ways. But as you think about it, you start to realize, oh, it makes sense. You're just thinking about it the wrong way, or at least for me. I'm not suggesting you thought of it that way, but for me, it was like there was a little block there. Anyway, these days, a lot of ice cream makers use other stuff to chill the mixture down low enough for it to freeze. And in fact, if you're looking at industrial ones, you're typically looking at a device that uses condensers and refrigerant to build in a sort of heat exchanger. It's the same as you would find in a refrigerator or an air conditioner. And I've talked about this process a lot too, but we will cover that in a little bit when we come back from this quick break. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Okay, before the break, I mentioned a heat exchanger, the kind that you would find in a refrigerator or, you know, like an industrial freezer, that kind of stuff, including ice cream machines. And how do these work? Well, they also take advantage of the physics of different phases of a material, in this case, a refrigerant, a liquid, or liquid that also in some parts of the system is a gas. So when a liquid evaporates, that liquid absorbs heat. This is why when you have water on your skin and it starts to evaporate off your skin, it feels cool because the water is absorbing heat from your body as part of that evaporation process. When water condenses, then it releases heat. So when a gas condenses into a liquid, it is releasing heat. When it's a liquid that's evaporating into a gas, it absorbs heat. So if you create a system in which you have a refrigerant running through a tube and it evaporates in part of that system, it will absorb heat in that part. And if it condenses in another part of the system, it will release heat in that part. You can actually transfer heat from one part into the outside part. And that's how refrigerators and freezers work, right? You've got essentially some piping, a tube, if you will, that runs through a freezer. And in this process, the refrigerant in that tube is boiling off into a gas and as such is absorbing heat through the entire pathway that's inside the freezer. It then passes through a condenser. The condenser's job is to pressurize this very now warm gas, and it becomes an even hotter liquid because you've increased the pressure, you've increased the boiling point of this gas. It now has condensed into a liquid. The liquid you allow to pass through condenser coils, and as it does so, it releases heat to the external environment, and then eventually it reaches an expansion valve. This valve only works in one direction. It allows the high-pressure liquid to go through this expansion valve and then drop into an area of much lower pressure, at which point the liquid boils off and thus begins to absorb heat. So as it goes through the expansion valve, it's moving into the freezer again, right? That's where it's pulling the heat from the freezer into this boiled off refrigerant, and it goes through the system again. So really you can think of the expansion valve and the condenser as creating two different sections of this system. In one section, you have low pressure, and that's where the refrigerant can absorb heat. And then the other section, you have high pressure, and that's where the refrigerant condenses and releases heat to the outside environment. So a lot of industrial modern ice cream machines use this method. And again, it's pretty simple, really, when you get down to it. I mean, you do have a motor that you have to deal with the condenser, right? Like that's an actual motorized part of the system. But otherwise, you're using valves and pipes to just take advantage of physics in order to make a section very cold and to transfer that heat to the outside. Again, same way the air conditioners work. So pretty cool. Anyway, This is just one component, obviously, of ice cream machines. Even the one we talked about earlier with the ice and rock salt. Cooling it down is just one part of it. Another part of it is churning the ice cream. When you churn ice cream, you're introducing air into the mixture, into the fat, the milk, and the sugar, and whatever else may be in it. This makes the ice cream fluffier. You wouldn't want just a solid block of sweetened cream. It would be very difficult to eat. You want it to have that consistency where it's kind of cloud-like and fluffy. Churning more and more air into this mixture will make it softer and softer. So if you are able to do this enough, you can make it soft enough so that you can treat the ice cream as if it's a semi-liquid. You can use, pumps and stuff, or even just gravity to allow it to flow through pipes or a valve or a spigot, as it were. Now, this brings us back to Mr. Charles Taylor back in 1926. So he files his patent in December 1926. The patent is still available for you to read. In fact, I did read it. I looked at the images and everything. It's pretty cool. No pun intended. It used a compressor and it used condenser coils and that kind of thing. It did rely on a salted liquid as the refrigerant, and it used an electric motor to provide the churning motion in the freezing chamber. So it didn't require a human being to use their, actual physical labor to churn the ice cream. And his ice cream chamber also featured a spout where you could draw the soft ice cream out by opening up a valve. There's some disagreement in the world of ice cream, which I did not realize was a thing, but it is. But there's some disagreement as to whether Charles invented soft serve ice cream, actually, or if someone else did. Whether he invented soft serve ice cream or he just made a machine that was really good at making it, the end of the line is that his device worked. And that's when he moved out of becoming an ice cream businessman to a ice cream maker businessman. He made the equipment that other ice cream shops would end up using. And thus was born the Taylor Freezer Company. Okay, we're going to now flash forward by three decades. Now we're up to 1956. That was the year when the head of the McDonald's Corporation, a guy named Ray Kroc, whom you can learn about in other stuff podcasts. I think Stuff You Should Know has done an episode on him. I'm sure there's been stuff. I know Ben Bolin must have talked about Ray Kroc at least once or twice in some of his shows. Anyway, Ray Kroc made a deal with the Taylor Freezer Company to buy Taylor machines so that his restaurants could make milkshakes and that kind of thing. And this became a long-standing partnership between McDonald's and Taylor. That partnership continues to this very day. Now, a few years back, McDonald's did sign a contract with another ice cream machine company called Carpigiani. So technically, franchises have two options when it comes to buying an ice cream machine for their store, but they have to buy it from one of those two vendors because of this contract. As a franchise owner, you do own the store, but you still have obligations to the corporate entity of McDonald's. And one of those is you got to work with McDonald's suppliers, and that includes the suppliers for their equipment. You can't go outside the restaurant's family to do that kind of stuff. But this still raises a question. Here are these Taylor, freezer machines, these ice cream machines that can make all sorts of stuff when they're working. But why are they so frequently out of order? Right? This is a company that traces its history back to 1926. What is the problem that causes essentially a third of all of the McDonald's franchises in the United States to list that their ice cream machine is currently, off the menu, as it were? Why are they not working? Well, this comes down to a few key factors. One is that proper operation of the Taylor ice cream machine that you find in McDonald's includes a cleaning process that is complicated, to put it lightly. Part of that process is a 4-hour cleaning mode. During that mode, the machine actually heats up with the purpose to sanitize everything. which makes sense, right? You're handling a lot of food items. You don't want anything to potentially cause food poisoning or, you know, for any contaminated food to cause an issue. So obviously cleaning is important and sanitizing makes sense. But when you are sanitizing it, you can't be using it to make ice cream, right? It's heating up. And the process, like I said, takes 4 hours to do it. Whether or not the 4 hours are necessary for this process, I can't say, but that's how long it takes. And that means there's 4 hours of not making ice cream per day. Now, of course, you could just run this mode as the McDonald's is closing for the night. And then technically it should just be ready to go by opening of the next day, right? But it is just one part of a multi-step process. I think there were 11 steps total for cleaning these ice cream machines. And if someone goofs up while going through this cleaning process, you might end up getting an error code. Now, as iFixit discovered, the support documentation for the Taylor ice cream machines is, let's just say, it's somewhat lacking. It lacks comprehensibility. It may be difficult for you to even find an error code in the manual. And once you do, the explanation in the manual may not be sufficient for you to be able to figure out what exactly is wrong and how to fix it. So if you do mess something up, you could get an error code, but have no idea of what to do in order to clear the problem. At that point, the solution is to call a service person from Taylor. And they send out a licensed, authorized service person to your store, and they do some maintenance and repair on the machine. That service has a very high price tag. According to iFixit, for 15 minutes of service time, it costs $315. Not an hour of service time. That's just 15 minutes. If you took an entire hour to have this machine repaired, if it took the service person an hour to fix whatever the problem was, that would set you back $1,260. That's some expensive ice cream, my friend. And again, according to iFixit, 1/4 of Taylor's revenue comes from these service calls. So wrap your head around that. A company that makes ice cream machines and other stuff too, admittedly, they make grills and other equipment. Anyway, 25% of their revenue comes not from their sales, but by sending out folks to fix those machines, which probably not a great selling point, really. Like if you are a customer and you find out that the vendor you're considering makes 1/4 of their revenue by fixing the devices they sell, that raises the question of, well, how reliable is your product? Because if you're making 1/4 of your revenue just from fixing the stuff you make, how often does it break? Because that sounds like it breaks a lot. Because these are not cheap machines either. So iFixit suggests that perhaps, again, this is just an observation, it's not a conclusion, but perhaps the uninformative technical manuals and the complicated cleaning process could be intentional in part as a way to generate service calls. It's kind of like planned obsolescence. You know, that's that concept that companies build into their devices, a limited shelf life or a limited life cycle so that they will break at a point where someone will have to replace it. It's kind of related to that, that if Taylor's documentation were actually more helpful, maybe someone at the McDonald's could just hop in and do whatever was needed to clear out the error code, and then the ice cream would be back on the menu and there'd be very little downtime for the machine. But it appears that Taylor decided to make it very challenging for anyone other than someone from within their ecosystem to do this kind of stuff. That really became apparent a few years ago when some hackers built a device using a Raspberry Pi board. I've talked about the Raspberry Pi before. It's essentially a computer on a chip. They're super cool. Anyway, this company created a device, and actually the company itself had the same name as the device, Kitch, K-Y-T-C-H. This Kitch device could plug into a USB port that's inside the Taylor ice cream machine. If you watch that iFixit video, they'll actually show you where that USB port would be found. And whenever you would have an inevitable error message pop up on this machine, you could plug the Kitch device into the ice cream maker. It would read the error code and it would actually tell you what the problem was and, you know, potentially even how to fix it. So rather than have to thumb through this technical manual, and maybe you never even find the error code in there because it's not arranged in a way that makes a whole lot of sense, you get a readout right away on a connected device and you're able to take action. Now a McDonald's franchise owner could purchase one of these Kitch devices and have the ability to address at least the less serious issues with their ice cream machines, you know, ones that wouldn't require someone to come out and maybe swap out a part or anything like that, and the ice cream machine would have less downtime. That would be great news. But I bet you can already guess what happened next. If you can't, don't worry. After this quick break, I'll be back and I'll explain what happened next. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices. And that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
So, Kitch comes out with this USB device built on a Raspberry Pi that will explain what the error codes in these Taylor ice cream machines actually mean and potentially help you fix the problem. But McDonald's corporate was not happy about this because at the corporate level, McDonald's had signed an exclusive service contract with Taylor. And this would mean that if they allowed their franchise operators to use a Kitch device and potentially sidestep the service contract, they would be in violation of that contract with Taylor. So the corporate leaders decided to send out a message to all franchises saying, hey, we know this thing exists, this diagnostic tool, but don't go using it. And essentially they put the pressure on the different restaurant franchisees who for the most part stopped using the Kitsch device because it wasn't worth the frustration and the pressure from corporate and the threats that, you know, maybe the franchise would end up getting into real trouble if they didn't just play ball with the service contract stuff. Now, the folks at iFixit say that the two really big issues with these machines are that, one, they will stop working if they overheat, right? Which, not that unusual for technology. Technology, when it gets too hot, often will just stop working. And these ice cream machines are no different. So if they're in high demand, they can overheat. And then what you end up is ice cream that never actually solidifies. It just becomes goopy. And it can take a while for the machines to cool down enough to work again. So they essentially become offline. The other big issue is the one we talked about just recently, this idea about these error codes paired with a really substandard technical manual make it difficult, if not impossible, to figure out just what has gone wrong at any given time. So you can't really do anything about it except make a service call request. The iFixit video is great. They even open up a machine. They show all the different components. They explain, you know, where some of the issues can happen. They explain what some of the switches do. They also talk about a really infuriating legal problem here in the United States that blocks iFixit or anyone else from creating a tool like the Kitsch. Why that's technically against the law? Because of the DMCA, or Digital Millennial Copyright Act. And maybe you're thinking, how the heck does copyright law get into this? Well, the DMCA allows for essentially the owner of intellectual property to create digital locks to protect that property. And it's illegal to try and get around those locks. This, in my opinion, is a big old stupid decision that the government made that has terrible consequences, and it's been in place since the 90s. So let me put it another way. Let's imagine a scenario where you've bought yourself a shiny music CD, and I get it. You know, CDs are not really the popular format, but let's just imagine for the sake of argument, you've gone out, you bought yourself a CD of an album that you've always wanted. Maybe it's one that's not available digitally. And you love the music on this CD, and you plan to listen to it a lot. You're going to even take it around with you and stuff. So you're a little concerned that you could be putting through the CD through a lot of wear and tear. And as such, you want to make a backup copy of the contents of that CD so that you still have that in case something happens to the CD itself. Now, copyright law in the United States allows you to do this. It is covered under fair use. You can make a copy of material for the purposes of backup or archival. That's fine. As long as you're not distributing it and you're pretty much in the clear. You can make a copy for your own purposes. But let's say that the company that pressed this music CD included some digital rights management, some DRM stuff on the CD itself. And that is meant to prevent unauthorized copying. But the problem is it actually prevents all copying, even if it otherwise would be legal, because you can't really create a digital system that's like, oh, in this instance, we'll let you make a backup copy, but in every other case, we're going to prevent it from happening. Instead, it's an all or nothing. We're going to prevent any kind of copying whatsoever. That happens, right? That's part of what a lot of DRM issues run into. Well, hackers have spent a lot of time making tools that can circumvent different types of DRM, including the kind that was sometimes put on compact discs. So the DMCA has within it rules that say it's against the law to use or make those kinds of tools, or to try and get around digital protection in the first place. So you have the legal right to back up the material that's on that CD, but you do not have the legal right to get around the digital locks that prevent you from making the copy. This is kind of like saying everything inside that bank vault belongs to you. However, it is illegal for you to open the bank vault, to breach it in any way, to penetrate the walls. You can't get to the stuff that's inside the vault. It belongs to you, but you can't get to it. So again, in my opinion, this is dumb. It is a dumb consequence here that has really hurt consumers, especially just like regular valid consumers who have bought stuff and could not make a backup because there were these preventions in place for a problem that really isn't as big as the companies would have you believe. Anyway, the folks at iFixit plan to appeal to Congress to try and create exemptions to DMCA for the purposes of maintenance and repair, including for industrial equipment like the Taylor ice cream machine. So not just that machine. This is an issue that is prevalent throughout the tech sector and the industrial sector. It's not just for these ice cream machines. But until Congress makes such an exemption and writes it into law, trying to create ways to help folks avoid what some might view as extortionate service practices is technically against the law. You can't make the tools that bypass those locks. Even if it's legal for you to make the repairs yourself, the locks, you can't get around. I mean, you could technically get around them, but legally you're not supposed to. It is another one of those weird, not quite a catch-22. It's not quite that level, but it's real close. And it is infuriating. It's one of those that makes you look at politics and bureaucracy and you just say, I'm just going to go live in the woods and I'll take a hand-cranked ice cream machine with me because I don't have to worry about that one so much. Anyway, I thought that this was a pretty fun way to kind of explore the right to repair, the issues with things like copyright law that make the right to repair that much more complicated, and why it always seems to be the case that when you go to Mickey D's and you want yourself an ice cream, you can't get one because the ding dang darn machine is down. Now we understand, or at least we have a better grip on it. Also, make sure you go and check out that iFixit video. Like I said, it's really good. They talk a lot more about the systems inside the machines. They give a passionate plea for the right to repair and the need for change in copyright law in the United States. It's well worth your time to watch. And I don't have any connection to the iFixit people, by the way. I don't know any of them personally. I've never worked for the company. I just like their stuff. That's it for this episode. I hope you're all well and staying cool. Get yourself an ice cream, and I'll talk to you again really soon.
Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.